afternoon, and thanks for joining us today for SeedWorld's strategy webinar. We're going to be talking about best practices in seed treatment operations. We will be live tweeting from today's webinar and Facebook using the hashtag strategy webinar. So if you want to follow along there, we would welcome that. I also want to thank our sponsor for making this webinar happen, and that is Syngenta. Today, we will be hearing from Carol Mosley, and Carol serves as Senior IPM and Stewardship Manager for Stewardship and Regulatory Policy in the U.S. for Syngenta, and Andy Leuenberger, Manager for Training and Stewardship at the Syngenta Global Seed Care Institute. Our lineup in terms of what we will be talking about is Carol will be highlighting kind of the safety and label information and digging in deep there. And then Andy will be following up, honing in on stewardship and application. After we hear from them, we will open it up to questions from you, our audience, and both Andy and Carol will have an opportunity to answer those. If at any point you have a question, we just ask that you go ahead and type that into the chat box, and during the Q&A session, I will make sure they have a chance to answer them. So again, type any questions that you might have throughout the presentations into the chat box, and we'll go from there. So our first speaker is Carol Mosley. And after earning his doctorate in weed science from Virginia Tech in 1990, Carol took a position as a Syngenta field research representative and has been with the company ever since. Through the years, he served in a number of areas, including research and development, marketing, post-patent, business development, industry relations, and regulatory affairs. Prior to serving as industry relations lead to Syngenta's corn and soybean groups, he managed the Callisto plant technology brands. In his position today, Carol is instrumental in developing conservation, resistance management, pesticide safety education, and stewardship policies across the company's portfolio. And with that, Carol, I'll let you begin your presentation.
Thank you very much, Julie. Welcome, everybody. On the line today, I'm speaking to you from Greensboro, North Carolina, where it's been pretty warm the last few days and humid, but I look forward to visiting with everyone as it relates to information around our Seed Care Institute, but primarily around stewardship of seed care products. Again, I'm located in Greensboro, and I'm with the Environmental Policy and Stewardship team here in Greensboro, and I've had an opportunity to visit with many of you over the years out in the field as it relates to some of the seed care operations and some of the seed treatment operations that we visited. So we really appreciate that opportunity. If we'll move to the first slide, it has a picture of the front panel of Clariva Elite Beans on that first slide. And I'd like to point out and just think for just a few minutes all the items that go in just putting the front panel on the label. The first thing I'd like to talk about is just the name of the product itself, the Clariva Elite Beans. That's the first part. But then directly above that, you'll see the term Group 4A insecticide and Group 4, 7, 12 fungicides. Most all the labels in our industry now, whether it be seed care products or other products, should be labeled with the site of action on the front part panel of the label. And you can find information out about as it relates to these groups. Again, that's related to Group 4A insecticides or the site of action for the insecticide that's in this product, the thiamethoxam. But you also have Group 4, 7, and 12 fungicides, and that would be the thiamethoxam, the mefenoxam, fludioxanil, and sedexane that's associated with this product, the various different sites of action there. So you can follow up on information. All of that is around EPA and even the companies themselves working to make sure that people understand the various different sites and modes of action of products that we have in the marketplace. And when we have these combination mixtures like this, it's very helpful. The next part I'll point you to is the part that talks about, it says insecticide and nematicide with fungicides. It just tells you what the product is in there. You know, it's a seed treatment product for protection against damage from the listed insects and seed-borne diseases, and you know, it goes on to talk about soybean cyst nematode, et cetera, on soybeans. And then directly under that is what I was alluding to. It talks about the specific active ingredients and the percentage of active ingredient in this product, and you'll see other ingredients listed as 80%. And I'll just want to point out, it's not always easy when you have combination mixtures like this. You have to make sure that you understand how compatible these products are together, especially if you have a product like Pasteria in the mix. And also, the tricky part associated with putting this on a seed is the fact that not only do they have to cooperate and work with each other on that seed, but also if this seed is going to be stored any length of time, you have to understand that you're going to save your germination. It's not going to decrease the germination to any significant extent when you do that. So that's the tricky part. That's the more tricky part associated with formulating a seed care product than, let's say, one that goes into the jug and later gets sprayed. So that's an additional step that has to be done. The next step underneath that has got the CAS numbers as it relates to our products, and that's just a specific chemical abstracts number. That's really not much that you have to know about related to that, except all chemical substances ultimately get those types of numbers to categorize them and to track them throughout. I think it's through the Chemical Society. So, in the next one, we'll skip out of the caution word for just a second, or the label related to that, and we'll go to the EPA registration number, which is directly under that, and that's 100-1620 on this specific product. But that's just the registration number at EPA, and then there's an establishment number, and then we have information that will tell us when this label was developed and that sort of thing. So there's lots of things just on the front panel, but that takes me back to the caution word that we have related to this label, and that takes us to the next slide, and that's the one I want to talk about for just a few minutes. So if you just think about that signal word, it can say many different things, right? Warning, caution, danger. In this specific case related to Chlorava, it was actually caution, but as you look at this slide, and I've still got it pasted on here, I've got an arrow drawn to the top of this bar, and these bars represent something that Phillips McDougall, a company, has put together in terms of surveying other companies about the cost of developing active ingredients. And you can see that was $150 million or so in 1995 and up to about $286 million in the 2010 to 2014 range, what it takes to develop a product. But I just want to point out that a significant part of that $29 million in that bar and band there is spent developing and understanding the toxicity of these products. And I just want people to understand that. And ultimately, when you do these six-pack and acute tox studies, is what they call them, related to these products, all of this is understanding not only the active ingredients and you know what the toxicity is related to that, but also the inerts in the product or the products that are used to put it in the solutions. So, you know, all of that's taken into combination, and we have to understand what the risk is associated with those products in order to put a precautionary word on the label, like the word caution. So it's just interesting, you know, you sit there and you see those words on the label. I just want you to know and think about, as you look at one of those labels, how much time and effort goes into establishing even just what the signal word needs to be on that label. So that takes us to the next slide. You know, they can indicate actually how acutely toxic the product is to humans and domestic animals. And it can say anything, and this is various different labels, but you can see danger poison on certain labels, or you'll see danger, or you'll see warning, or like on the Chlorava Elite product that I just talked about, it was a caution segment associated with that. Just realize that those four categories are established based upon the studies and the work that is done to establish the toxicity of the product and the specific formulated product itself. That takes us to the next slide. And what does that word dictate? It actually really drives what personal protective equipment you will need to wear when applying that product. So the product label will list what PPE, that's what I'll refer to it is required for the use of the product. It's based on, again, on that signal word for the product and the exposure location. You know, for example, if a product is considered to be concern related to your eyes, goggles, or maybe a full face shield might be required. And then additional PPE might be worn that exceeds. You can do that. You can wear equipment that's above and beyond what you necessarily need, but you can't. You shouldn't be wearing less than what is actually listed on the label. And just think about how much time and effort has gone into establishing what that signal word should be for each and every individual product in the marketplace, not only from a seed care perspective, but also across the board in the crop protection industry. That takes us to the next slide, which indicates the concerns from past observations of seed treatment use, and that's what I want to talk about here. We actually, within our company, within Syngenta, we will go out and we'll contract with a contractor to evaluate and establish whether or not people are doing safe practices as it relates to applications of our seed care products and other crop products. But in this case, we'll do that. We've done it quite a bit with seed care products just to make sure that people are using our products properly. So these are actually in-field studies that take place during of the season when people are treating seeds, and these are a few of the things that we saw when we were visibly taking a look at this and during the recordings associated with these studies. And one of them is that we try to discourage, especially with certain products, is the use of compressed air for equipment cleaning, and you end up usually blowing a lot of dust and even in some cases active ingredient around the warehouse when you do that. And when you have that, use that compressed air a lot, there's a lot of evidence of visible dust in the facility, and there's an increased dermal, and you know, you can get it on your skin or you can breathe in the product, and that's a concern we have. So we support a lot of HEPA vacuum use, you know, and filters associated with those vacuums, so we think that's a better way to go, and mostly, you know, liquid situations where we're trying to wipe down and clean surfaces as it relates to the warehouse, and try to discourage the use of compressed air. Every once in a while, people get in a situation where they know they've got to maybe bump one or two seeds out of the you know, out of the bin as it relates to the treater itself. But we try to discourage people from using a lot of compressed air. And another thing we saw was the improper use of gloves. These thin latex gloves are, you know, less than 14 milliliters thick. These are non-chemical resistance gloves. They're the ones gloves that I tell you see at the doctor's office. You don't really need to be using, you shouldn't be using those in many instances. And this is depends on the product. They'll say it specifically on the label, but many of our labels say it has to be, you know, chemical resistant gloves and greater than 14 milliliters thick. So think about that as you do that. That's very important. And another thing we've seen in many instances, and again, this is dependent on the label and depending on the product, but in some of our products that don't allow the use of cotton or cloth gloves, people are using those, and we highly discourage that. We just want to make sure that people use those chemical-resistant gloves. In a few instances on this slide, you'll see no glove use during certain activities, and we've seen that also, especially when you've got a slurry and treating seed, to have somebody reach out and grab the seed while it's wet, especially. It's just opening yourself up to exposure. So those are a few of the watch-outs. I don't like to always talk in negatives, but these are a few of the don't-dos as it relates to our industry. And the last one is, sometimes you do have to climb into the treater drum for cleaning, but if you do that, make sure you use the proper PPE when that takes place, because you need to protect yourself when you get inside of that drum. So those are a few of the don'ts related to this industry. And then when you do go to the next slide, you know, in terms of specific PPE required for seed treatment, workers, you know, depends on their task is in terms of what they have to wear. So I always take a look at that product label. And remember, when I talk to you today, remember that guy from Syngenta that talked to you about what it took to write that label, especially as it relates to the precautionary word on the side of the label and the fact that drives what PPE that you need to wear. And always wear those proper gloves, even when checking seed flow during treatment. And don't wear thin nitrile gloves or doctor's gloves or cloth gloves when you're treating seeds. It's just not a really good idea But again, go by the label as it relates to that, and always wear the correct type respirator and get fit tested for that respirator in those instances. So with that, I've taken a few minutes here this morning or this early this afternoon as it relates to seed care products and some of the do's and don'ts related to that. I'd just like to thank you for that opportunity. I think I'll turn it back to Julie here now to talk to you a little bit, or have Andy talk to you all the way from Basel, Switzerland today. So thanks again for the opportunity.
Great. Thank you so much, Carol. We appreciate that and for sharing your insight there. Next up, we have Andy Leuchenberger, and I'm trying to pronounce his name properly there. He is originally from Switzerland and has served as lead for Syngenta's seed treatment, application, quality assessment, and engineering for more than 20 years. In this role, he was responsible for testing formulations and recipe development, establishing measurable application quality parameters for assessment, and equipment testing. He also proposed seed treatment equipment solutions for different market segments and was charged with training stakeholders on the safe use of seed treatment solutions. Previously, Andy was a global insecticide product manager and was responsible for two insecticides. He also served as an application specialist for crop spraying and an agricultural consultant in collaboration with the Ministry of Agriculture and Fisheries in Oman for crop production and protection. And so with that, Andy, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Julie. And good afternoon, everyone. Thanks, Carol, also for preparing the floor for this discussion. I will talk a bit about the Syngenta seed care activities in the area of the application. Within our seed care strategy, we are talking about products, application, and services. And in this particular speech, I will talk about the application part, as the seed care institute is part of providing that service to our customers. We have a seed care institute network all over the globe. As you can see, right now we have 14 institutes, and there are more to come. Why do we have those institutes all over the globe? It's quite obvious. We want to be close to the customer. We want to speak the customer's language. We would like to know the customer's needs for application-related support. Now, we move on, and within the activities that we are talking about, within the SeaCare Institute, we have six focus service areas, and today we will talk about specifically four of them. So the typical activities or service areas of the SeaCare Institute are in recipe development. That's basically how do I blend different seed treatment products, fungicides, insecticides, maybe other components. Then I'm talking about the application quality assessment and the engineering part. That is sort of my key role. The stewardship elements, the safe use of seed treatment products, the training activities. These are the key focus areas for today. But within the SeaCare Institute network, we are also having the service for seed safety and seed testing. These are important topics when we are talking about recipe development. So every mixture of a new seed treatment recipe needs to be tested so it does not harm the quality of the seeds. Then in the SeaCare Institute, there is one other topic, that is the product marketing support. So that's a role where we are visualizing benefits of seed treatment solutions so we can easily convey messages and showing the benefits of seed treatments. For our session on the SeaCare Institute services more related to the application field, there are a few examples of activities that are very crucial. So for one of it is the compatibility testing of seed treatment products. Then there are a few headaches with regard to bridging of treated seeds. Just imagine we have an issue with bridging of seeds in a bin. Somehow that bin has to be cleaned out. And how do we do this with minimal operator exposure? There is a very clear link to stewardship. So if we do our homework perfectly correct with the development of recipes and establishing optimum application recommendations, those challenges should be limited or actually not existing at all. Then there is one topic that is around dust. We heard from Carol already, dust at maintaining treatment equipment, cleaning out a piece of equipment, what kind of technologies can be used to minimize operator exposure, like compressed air versus vacuum cleaning. And these are challenges that are also definitely leading into stewardship opportunities. Plantability, why do we do plantability? Yes, we want to respect good accuracy, good plantings, plant spacing, and so on. But on top of it also, it's about cleaning equipment. Planters, nobody likes the idea of the downtime. Nobody wants to clean out equipment. And that is not only a hassle for losing downtime, but it's also a potential operator exposure. Seed safety testing, a crucial activity for the evaluation of recipes, and then the visualization of benefits of seed treatment solutions. These are some of the services the CQR Institute network is offering to our customers. Let's look for the needs of stewardship in a brief overview. When we are considering a seed treatment operation, we are starting from the left-hand side. We have seeds, so we have chemical products. So there are a few challenges where stewardship elements come in: practical handling, minimizing operator exposure to whether it's the chemical or already the natural seeds and the dust that is being generated. Then we have the steps for calibrating of an equipment. So we have to calibrate the flow of seeds, the chemical has to be calibrated, and those calibration steps are very often linked to manual operations. So what is the adequate operator PPE that needs to be recommended? Or maybe in the future, there is evolution in application technology where those steps can be minimized with more automated technologies. Then we have the actual application process with primary application, so the initial contact, secondary application, that all takes place in a treatment machine where maintenance, cleaning of equipment could be one of the potential challenges. So hopefully with adequate recipe development, we can minimize those kind of buildups in order to improve, of course, the operation as such, but also minimizing potential operator exposure. Then we have the treated seeds with bagging potentially what exposures to operator, eventually planting, drilling, and again, we might face some contacts of dust, dusting off with potentially contaminated with chemicals. That should be minimized. It is the recipe work and the application that can control that to a very high degree. Let's start with some of the areas and actual benefits of in the stewardship area, the preparation of the seeds before we treat. Cleaning and sizing the seeds is very crucial. Now, I'm focusing on the de-dusting because minimizing the dusting off before we put a chemical on is a great advantage for having the chemical stick perfectly on the seeds. So the benefit in stewardship is less dusting off of the treated seeds at the end of the day. And in fact, the dust that is being generated from even untreated seeds, so not even contaminated with a chemical, is hazardous to human beings. Then we have the preparation of the seed treatment slurry. Of course, this is the moment where we are handling the highly concentrated material. And in this case, we need to respect the job-specific PPE. And that is not only goggles and heavy coverall. It is definitely adequate gloves. And we have heard how important it is to wear rigid gloves that can also withstand not only chemicals, but also a bit of a mechanical stress. The recipe design is part of what a CQR Institute, for example, could provide as a service, making certain that that recipe meets the requirements for the treatment. Then it is also about the training part. So it is making certain that the operators know how to use the products safely and understanding the need for hygiene is the base for doing the job more clean and more safely. We have then in the application process as such, the build-up in the equipment, we want to have minimal cleaning activities. And again, I'm just repeating the importance of the adequate application recipe, making certain that the ingredients meet the requirements for good treatment on the seeds, but also minimal build-up in the treatment equipment in order to minimize maintenance work. And as another quality criteria, and that's what we have not even touched yet, is the loading and is the C2C product distribution. With the calibration process, we can strongly influence actually the bulk loading, so the amount of chemical based on the target, but then we also have to make certain that every seed is protected to the same degree, and that will help with a quality parameter that is eventually for valid for the treated seeds when they are entering into the field. In the bagging process, for the bagging process, there are different technologies that can be used. Bagging solutions with engineering elements for dust control are very helpful. In the case of absence of adequate dust control at a bagging spot, of course, operator-specific PPE needs to be recommended, and this will certainly cover also a respiratory mask of what a specific degree of for a respirator, and usually the information is indicated on the labels that is needed to have the adequate respiratory protection. Operator training for the safe use is part of the service offer from Syngenta. Educated operators are less prone to potential operating risks, exposure risks, sorry. We have the planting part. Once the seeds are treated, ready to go into the field, at a certain stage they have to be transferred into a planting or drilling equipment. Or if that is bagged material, very often the operator is very close with the transferring of the material, with his head is close to the hopper box. So transferring the seeds into a planter or into a drill is a potential for exposure. And so the operator, the farmer, should learn that he should stand upwind. So in case of any kind of dust that is being generated at transferring the seeds into a hopper, the operator is not exposed to a high degree. Then again, on the maintenance, cleaning of an equipment, we want to make certain that there is a marginal build-up, and in order to minimize the downtime of the planting equipment and reduce operator exposure. As an activity of the Seeker Institutes, we are also making certain that seed spacing is optimum, so plantability studies are part of every individual treatment recipe, so we make certain that planting equipment, drilling equipment is not exposed to particular challenges when using a certain seed treatment solution. Then drifting off, it's quite a topic, drifting off of seed treatment dust at planting, that's an element where we need to keep an eye on, minimizing that dust off. There are different technologies. One is optimum treatment recipes, making certain there is limited dusting off, or with vacuum planters, there is the recommendation for the use of deflectors. These are technologies where the expelled air from the vacuum generator is directed towards the ground, so the drift from dust that is being generated at planting is not drifting long distances. Now, I'm just trying to give a bit of a picture on how we see need for progress in seed treatments. And now the focus is more on the technology. We would like to promote or discuss the topic with the equipment industry that they make certain that we have simplified processes for cleaning and maintenance work of seed treatment equipment, easy access for cleaning, so we can easily use vacuum cleaners, we can scrape off some buildup if needed and take out the residues with vacuum cleaners. Stuff like this is going to be more and more important. Now, especially with batch treatment technologies, there is great progress achieved over the past decade, and I'm sure there is more to come in the next few years. Another element there where application quality is going to become more and more important is we want to respect the rate, the product rate, to a very high degree. So there is a target rate. We'd like to hit more or less 100% of the target rate on the seed, but not only the bulk rate is critical, there is need also for making certain that every seed is protected to the same degree. So seed-to-seed product distribution is a need for further improvement with the equipment technology. I wish that was already existing. There is a good trend, but we are not there yet. Where I can see a future also in the equipment technology is in further digitalizing of the operations. So what is already in progress is equipment tools that measure accurately the flow of seeds, measure accurately the amount of products. This leads to reduced calibration activities, meaning also there is less potential for operator exposure. And in addition, once those tools are working very accurately, we can meet the market needs for the future accuracy of seed loading more precisely. Then where I see also of the future is in simplified calculators and programming technology, where the treatment technology, the treatment machine can actually even download calculators from a service provider, from, for example, the Seeker Institute, download it onto the treatment machine, and so there is less operator error when punching in treatment recipes into a treatment machine. More and more is the need expressed for treatment data recording. So we want to know what seed lot has received, what kind of treatment. In many operations, that is already a reality, but we'd like to see that more extended to also further downstream application places. Simplified operator instructions, that's what we are expecting out of digitalizing the technology, because nowadays quite often an operator has to handle several different control boards, control units, calculators, processors, and that makes life for an operator quite challenging. And we are seeing that in reality in many parts of the world, that seed treatment operators do not stay on the job for many years. So we need to replace new people, we need to educate new people regularly. And if we can simplify that with digitalization, that will be very helpful. So as a summary, I'd like to state that stewardship is not necessarily a negative element. With stewardship, we can improve treatment quality. With improved treatment quality, we are leading towards improved stewardship levels. So operator exposures can be reduced in the plants, in the field also at planting, if we are respecting the right rules, if we have well-trained operators and perfectly optimized seed treatment recipes. Operators should be educated in risk assessment, risk management. They should understand where are the challenges. They should know how to read the label. As we have seen, there's a lot of information on the label, as Carol has explained. That information should be accessible. Well, it is accessible to operators, but operators should know how to use how to read and interpret the labels. We would like to obtain minimized operator and environmental impact also at planting with optimized recipes and optimized planting equipment. This was a very brief overview on the link of application and stewardship. If you want to know more input, especially for the people out in the U.S., there is a ckresourcecenter.com page where you can read and get a lot of detailed input on recipes and on a lot of seed care relevant information. So thank you very much, Julie. Thank you, Carol, for having let me speak to that subject. It's a very interesting topic. Now I'd like to hand back to Julie.
Great. Thank you, Andy. We appreciate you sharing your slides and your expertise there. So there's a lot of good information packed into those couple of slides. Now what I would like to go ahead and do is open it up to questions and answers from you. So if you do have any questions, again, please go ahead and type those into the chat box and we will ask them of both Carol and Andy. I'm going to go ahead and kick off the first question. And Andy, you kind of mentioned the one resource there at the bottom of your last slide for more information in the U.S., the SeedCareResourceCenter.com. Also, I wanted to just make note that both ASTA and CropLife America have worked together to put together the Guide to Seed Treatment Stewardship. Either Andy or Carol, can either one of you speak to Syngenta's involvement in helping with the updated version of that?
Carol, do you want to respond?
I haven't been involved with the most recent one. I was involved in the first go around, Julie, when it came about. But I haven't been involved in so much of the details on the more recent version that they've been working on.
Okay.
Well, I know that there is a lot of data on it, white papers. There are calculators on it. There's product information on it. There is a link to seed safety data sheets and so on. So there is a lot of resource available on that center.
Good to know, Andy. Thank you. I personally have not looked at the new version, but I do know that it has been released and is a good reference point for companies or individuals who are looking for best practices as it relates to seed treatments. So the first question that we have in is from Jordan, and the question is, how much variation is there in the amount of active ingredient that is applied to each seed? So, Andy, I'll let you take that one.
Yes, that's a good question. That's quite a tough challenge. What we know from experience, from quite the big study database, if we do the best possible treatment we can do under lab conditions, we get, now that the focus is now on corn, and it's comparable also on cereals, but corn is the main crop. We get variations of, and now I'm expressing it in a statistical term. We have the mean, and around that mean, we have a standard deviation that is about 20%. This is best possible treatment we can get under lab conditions. In reality, good treatment standards are a standard deviation around the mean of around 25%. On downstream, more basic technology, we would probably expect something like 28-30% standard deviation out of the mean. So that is also where we can visually see that the seeds are obviously not very uniformly treated. At a level of 20%, visually, just looking at some seeds, you don't see an unevenness of the treatment on those seeds.
Great, thank you. And then the next question is also from Jordan. Do seed treatments affect long-term seed viability? If so, is there an accepted standard for how long seed treatments are seed safe? Carol, do you want to take a stab at that?
I can take a stab at that one. It's I don't have the specific numbers on, but I'll speak on it in general terms. I know the guys at the Seed Care Institute and work with people here in the Greensboro site. We actually have our formulations group, and they do significant extensive testing as it relates to knowing what the viability of the seed is after treatment. In other words, if you can take products off the shelf related to crop protection products to get applied to other crops and mix them together at the same ratio and apply them to a treated and applying to a seed, and you can run into significant concerns. Whereas our formulations group actually takes these active ingredients, and they work with systems that they know are milder to the seed. As a matter of fact, they have to evaluate many different combinations of products to make sure that they ultimately have something that does not significantly affect the germination related to a seed. I don't know what the standard is, what it's required, but I know we would meet the standard related to that, and you would have a minimal amount of impact related to seed germination. You just can't. You can't be in a position to have an impact on germination, especially over time. Obviously, you're going to see an increase in germination because you're going to be controlling insects and diseases and that sort of thing early on when you plant this product. But if it does have to stay on the shelf, we do shelf storage stability studies whereby we evaluate the germination of these seeds over time, and if they don't meet our strictest of quality control standards, then they don't make it to the shelf. This product doesn't make it.
Great answer there, Carol. What are typical storage conditions for treated seeds?
Well, do you want me to take Charlotte. That one, Daryl? Or Carol, do you want to take it?
Go ahead, Andy.
Okay. Well, typical storage conditions. I don't know whether I should respond to typical, but ideal storage conditions are probably in the area of, we know that for keeping seeds very safe for an extended period of time, that is, now I'm talking metric, 10 degrees Celsius, 50% relative humidity. These are the conditions, the most ideal conditions for typical seeds. And it's not only the temperature, it's also the seed moisture that is critical. And I'm sure we have in the audience here several experts on seed safety, and they would probably make a much bigger story out of it. We know that increased temperatures have an influence on the viability of the seed, on the genetics as such. High quality seeds from the beginning have a better storage conditions, storability than lower quality seeds. I would imagine that is quite an obvious statement anyway. So ideal conditions, cool, and 50% relative humidity. And we know that quite often seeds are stored in a warehouse, that is probably not properly insulated and not conditioned. So the minimum I do recommend is seeds need to be stored in the shade and in dry conditions, as cool as possible, but we have to be realistic, and sometimes also in a farm shed, temperature conditions are not really ideal. We have to respect the fact that with less optimum storage conditions, the quality of the seed is negatively influenced.
Thank you, Andy. The next question we have is for Carol. Are nitrile or latex gloves okay for handling dry seed? I am thinking of laboratory staff planting germination tests.
I think in that instance, you know, when you're looking at in laboratory scenarios, again, that's a little bit of a tough situation because I'm concerned about the solvent associated with not only the active ingredient there, but breaking it down. I know a lot of people do use it that way, but I would highly recommend, you know, chemical resistant gloves as it relates to that. But if you think that they're not getting exposure to the gloves, that's one thing, but that would, you know, present me with some concern as it relates to that even in laboratory settings. But I don't, Andy, when you guys are looking at lab type studies, are you guys using chemical resistant gloves there too?
In our small scale lab work, we are using the disposable gloves, I must admit, but these are not for long time use. We do some work where we are wearing the gloves for a couple of minutes and then replace them. If we do extended work, we are wearing heavy duty gloves as you have described.
Hopefully that answered the question.
Great, thanks Carol and Andy on that one. The next question we have is from Jean-Marc, and it is, we did not always use the best practices in our treatment plant. How can we measure existing contamination levels in the building, and what would be acceptable tolerance levels for dust contamination? Andy, do you want to take that one?
That's not an easy one for a straightforward answer. I don't have an absolute number for minimizing for an acceptable tolerance level. There are a few topics that I would add as a few keywords. I think we should start all over with housekeeping. If we are getting rid of dust levels regularly, and that for an industrial operation, I'm talking about daily, if we vacuum clean the dusty levels daily with an adequate vacuum cleaning technology with the right filters, then I don't think we would face really big issues. Acceptable tolerance for dust contamination, there is a European industry norm that is probably used also in other parts of the world, and I believe it is 0.1 milligram dust per meter cube of air. That is the dust level floating in the air, that's considered the tolerance within industries in many European countries. I do not have a US specific response. Maybe Carol, can you add something to that topic?
Yeah, I think for people that are concerned, you know, if you're using our products or if you're using somebody else's product, I would start with my seed care rep as it relates to that, and if you have a concern relative to that, we could probably develop a plan. You know, when we do these studies, when we look at these evaluations where we go into these facilities where they're using our product, and we actually take air samples, you know, during this process, we take dermal samples, we take, you know, various different ones, and we've seen pretty good results as it relates to that. But if you think you may have a concern somewhere, then I would suggest that you talk to your supplier related to that and see if you couldn't get some help and see where you can get relative to that. If you actually are using our products, Syngenta Seed Care products, I would talk to your seed care rep and help us and maybe work with us and back through our health and safety group. And through the Seed Care Institute, too, we'd help you develop a plan and evaluate what concerns you might have.
Thank you both for answering that question. The next one we have is from Kyle, and it is, as seed treatment rates get higher, can you offer any advice on how to test flowability and how to formulate new products to reduce bridging?
I guess that's a question on my shoulders for Kyle. Yes, seed treatment rates are getting higher, and it's not only the seed treatment rates, it's also the enhancement products like extra colorants, polymers, and that is making our application life quite often more and more tricky. So for one, a solution to improving seed flow is the use of finishing powders. And then the question about how to measure seed flow. We have our internal measuring technology where we establish the flow of freshly treated seeds, and we measure also the flow of dry seeds. The tool that we are using is basically a funnel with an outlet of about 2-inch diameter, and we measure how quickly does the seed flow through that orifice. If that seed won't flow anymore, then we know that is a potential challenge, so we have to identify solutions. As I've indicated, solutions so far are mostly based on lubricating agents, so finishing powders. There are some discussions ongoing with regard to drying technology. So after the treatment machine, there is a drying technology, whatever dryer it is. And with those drying technologies, we can improve the flow of the freshly treated seeds also. But of course, drying seeds is an extra effort, is a capacity challenge, and is an energy headache. So measuring the flow of the seeds with an orifice and a funnel is one of the technologies. There are alternative technologies with measuring the flow angle of freshly treated seeds, so putting the seeds on a flat surface, freshly treated seeds, lifting that flat surface at a certain angle, at a certain point, and measure the angle of repose. And that is another technology that is sometimes used to measure flow of freshly treated seeds.
And the next question is, and this one is directed to you, Andy. You've mentioned 20% variation. What is the target number or tolerance for Syngenta?
Yeah, and Ricardo, this is a very interesting challenge. we have different, I think we don't have just one single measure. There are different market segments where we know exactly that those different market segments cannot obtain the same degree of quality. If we are looking at an operation somewhere far remote in a developing country where we are probably treating with a concrete mixer, we cannot expect the same degree of quality than what we get out of a most modern batch treatment machine. So out of for corn treatments, these are my standards here at the Global Institute, and these they are not implemented to the same degree in all the CKR institutes. But my expectation is that for corn treatments, we should be at the level of 20% from that standard, as I've mentioned. So mean, out of the mean, the standard deviation should be no more than 25% for corn treatments with a batch treatment technology. Hope that
Thank
is
you, Andy.
Sufficient. Good, yeah.
I've got time for two more questions. The first one is, how often should seed loading be checked by HPLC or some other analytical method on the final seed product? Early in the season to check calibration, or periodically through the season, or every lot? When you think you have a problem. Carol, do you want to take a stab at that?
And sometimes when you get to situations when you get a question when you don't know the answer to, I'll say that I don't know the answer to that right off. I know it's what our seed care reps can tell you what they ask people to do. What I'd like to do for this situation, if Andy isn't familiar with that, is for you to take the information related to this individual, Julie, and I'll come back with the information unless Andy knows it off the top of his head.
Well, I can provide some input to it, and I like that question from Doug. Where do we have the biggest challenge when we are establishing a seed treatment operation? It is at the beginning of the campaign, when we are calibrating the equipment, when we prepare the slurries, and put that equipment in operation again. So I believe what is most critical is that we have some information at the beginning of the campaign. So we have the information on our the quality of the calibration work, and only periodically I would recommend to collect samples. And I don't, from my end, from a seed care perspective, we do not need to assess every individual seed lot. There are some seed companies that have that requirement for their own quality control, but in my opinion, from an application point of view, this is not an absolute must. So it is the beginning of the campaign that is the most critical part, in my opinion, for seed loading. All other HPLC loading analyses should be discussed with the customer for their particular need, and then it is a question of the resource. I mean, we shouldn't neglect that part too.
Yeah, not, this is Carol. I'm more involved in the safety aspect of it. So if you do deem that we'll, you can get the information there, Julie, I can find out what the specific requirement and request is from our perspective related to that and relay that information through you if need be.
Yes, I can absolutely do that. So thank you both. Our last question for today is, what is your opinion of adding in a specifically manufactured seed treatment type of non-toxic light type of oil with seed treatment on seed, such as a mineral oil? And either one of you can take a look to answer that.
I guess that is an application-related question or a Seed Care Institute subject. The main challenge, in my opinion, is the seed safety. As long as the material is a part of the recipe that has been developed and the recipe has been approved for the use of mineral oils, that is okay with me. Now, when I see the oil as an instrument in a seed treatment solution, there is a red light that is blinking in my brain, because very often oils are leading to not very quickly drying the treated seeds, so we get more built up in the downstream technology. So the treatment might be safe, but then we have weighing, conveying technologies, and so, and if the amount of mineral oil is too high, we also end up with smeary seeds, so eventually we are facing issues with plantability. So I would be very careful with the addition of oils, but I don't say absolutely no, because there are some uses where oils, now I've only come across to vegetable oils actually, are beneficial to seed treatments. But the recipe has to be developed very carefully.
Great. That brings us to the end of our webinar. And in conclusion, I would like to thank both Andy and Carol for sharing their expertise with us and taking the time to answer questions today. We really appreciate that. I also want to thank Syngenta for their support of this Seed World Strategy webinar series. Our next webinar will be held July 24th at 12 p.m. Central. The topic is improving wheat yields with what's on the seed. Again, this webinar has been recorded and will be made available on seedworld.com yet this week. And that is all we have for you today. So thanks so much to my team working behind the scenes to make this possible. Thank you to our listeners for joining us. We appreciate your feedback. And so if you have any feedback you'd like to provide us with, please don't hesitate to fill in the questionnaire at the end of this. And that's it for today. This is Julie Deering signing off.